This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, hello. Okay, great.
From the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
This is Spark.
This is Spark.
Technology.
Trends.
And fresh.
Fresh ideas.
Fresh ideas.
This
is on the air.
This is
online.
This is Spark.
CBC.ca/Spark.
How are you listening to Spark? On the radio? As a podcast on your MP3 player? Or by clicking play at the show blog? Today, from outsourcing the stuff you don't feel like doing yourself to watching TV whenever, however, wherever you like, it's the on-demand episode of Spark, and it starts anytime you want.
I was just reading on your blog about the death of TV. The ironic thing is I have two boys, age 8 and 5, and I asked them if they wanted to have a TV in their new house. And the oldest says yes, and the youngest says no. And the youngest, who's actually the one that wants TV, actually has video games in mind and not actually for watching TV.
The more cable channels I see created, the less I want cable.
The only thing I use live TV for now is to watch sporting events.
It is more interesting to me to be able to pick when I watch a show. I also like that I don't have to watch any commercials, and I do not have to adhere to a TV schedule.
So just give me the basics, and I'll find anything else I think I'm missing online.
Some of the responses from the Spark blog. Now, we started thinking about the future of television because it turns out that of the people who work on Spark and on And Sometimes Why, which is just next door, none of us has the usual TV with cable, check the TV guide setup. We watch television shows all right, but just not broadcasts in real time. For instance, I mostly rent DVDs. There are online networks starting like Juiced and Hulu.
We're also seeing, I think, much more visual media getting into lots more devices. So mobile phones, PDAs, that kind of thing, where the screens have got to the point where actually it's not a pain to watch a program on that anymore. I'm Matthew Cashmore, and I'm a development producer for the BBC. If they want that content when they want it, they can have it. So when they're on the bus, when they're on the train, they can sit there and watch a half an hour episode of Heroes or Spooks or one of those other programs they can catch up on. TV is not just sit back and enjoy and watch when we tell you to watch anymore. It's now far more about participating in the program, in the genre that you're interested in.
Okay, so Matthew's description of the future of TV is great, but after all, TV isn't only about that actual content. It's about the social aspect, those who shot JR moments that get everybody talking to each other around the water cooler or arranging parties to watch a series finale. Yeah, I mean, it strikes me that, you know, I am completely obsessed with the HBO show The Wire, but it's an entirely private experience for me. I can't talk to anybody about it because my colleagues don't watch it at all, and my friends who are in a later season than I am. So it's, you know, my enjoyment of it is sort of tempered because we can't connect over that experience.
But by the same token, your experience could be even better because you can connect with a much wider group of people that are at the same point in the series as you are, but you may not necessarily know quite yet.
I mean, I appreciate the value of being able to connect, say, with fan communities online where you discuss your favorite program. But do you think that there's something about not being able to have, say, the water cooler conversation with your coworkers, or actually sitting down in the same room with your family or your friends? Do you think we're losing something there?
Yes, I think we probably are. I must admit, one of my colleagues downloads programs as soon as they're available, and he watches them as soon as he possibly can, or when he wants to watch them. Mm-hmm. And because of that, he loses some of the shared experience. And we can't have conversations about Heroes or Lost because we're on completely different series in completely different timescales. As broadcasters, we have to continue to deliver content that at the moment the vast majority of the audience still want to deliver in. That's delivered to the box, in the corner, and increasingly they can use PVR boxes to time shift and record that content. But it's there. They can come home, they can sit back, and they can watch television. And then I think we're going to have to start thinking along the lines of, well, how do we deliver content to people who don't want to do that, who want sitting forward television that they can really interact with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that strikes me about the on-demand experience, or the experience where you can watch something again and again, say even just by renting it on DVD, is that it opens up opportunities for much more complex and multi-layered types of storytelling, just because you have the ability to really absorb it when you're ready to really absorb it and focus on it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's rule 101. The first thing that you have to understand about this world is that it's no good just taking the stories and the three-dimensional stories that you have on television at the moment. You have to appreciate that there are so many layers, so many different directions that the technology enables you to go. And if you don't take advantage of it, then I think you're perhaps being a little silly.
For more on how Matthew Cashmore sees the future of TV or visual content, we've posted the full unedited interview at our blog. Why? Because we're on demand. Now, when it comes to on-demand TV, it's not only that you can watch when you want, but where you want, you know, on your computer, on a cell phone, or an MP3 player. But some media do seem to cry out for a particular way to be consumed. Like Amazon just launched Kindle, their take on the electronic book. It's a white device that's about the size of a regular book. It sells for about $400, and it basically lets you wirelessly download books and magazines, and then you read it off of a screen. It supports some formats, though not others, like PDFs. Now, on the face of it, it's a logical technological step, right? You carry books and magazines and documents on a single device. It could be great for people who travel a lot, for instance. And there are other ebook formats, too, like the Sony Reader, that are easier to read off than a computer monitor. But somehow the whole ebook always seems to me, anyway, like the answer to a problem that doesn't need to be solved. I mean, a paper book is elegant, it's incredibly easy to read, you can drop it. And here's something, you can also loan a paper book endlessly to other people for free. How about you? Would you use an electronic book? What would it have to be able to do to make it worth giving up your paper books? Let us know what you think. You can send us an email at spark@cbc.ca.
Nora, hi.
What are you doing here?
I've got something for you. It's downstairs. It's so neat. You're going to love it.
I'm busy.
Listen, it's just going to take 5 minutes tops.
This is Kathy Bond. She and I do a podcast together.
Yeah, come on. Now you're wasting time. Come on, let's go. I'm telling you, it's worth your time. Okay, come on, Nora. Come on.
It's a surprise.
Oh,
stop dragging me.
Look.
It's a giant television and a lazy boy.
For you, my dear, for you.
Is there a giant television set outside in the park?
Because, Nora, this is the future. This is the 42-inch Runco all-outdoor ruggedized television display.
Why? Why make a jumbo outdoor television?
I thought you might ask me that, Nora. That's why here we have, on Runco Vision, Steve Brothman.
What's Runco Vision?
Nora, just go along with it, okay?
People were coming into our dealers' locations and asking about the possibility of installing a TV for them to watch outdoors. People want to spend more and more of their time outdoors, especially in urban environments.
You know, I find that kind of interesting, actually. I wonder, you've talked about this before, about how people are living in smaller and smaller spaces all the time, so maybe that's partly why we all feel like a bunch of hens in the chicken coop.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, like, you could take it onto a balcony, you could take it into a small backyard.
Okay, but Kathy, it's freezing out here. This is Canada, after all. This cannot be good for electronics.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, this whole technology really got going because of the hot tub industry. And it would be an environment like this, and people wanted these sliding screens that would come out of the back of their hot tubs in the middle of the winter. And then it's just sort of kind of pinwheeled from there.
But, okay, what would you watch on it, though?
You could watch TV, you can watch movies, mm-hmm. you can have it up for your computer apps, and the most interesting thing of all is gaming. Imagine you stick the Xbox in a plastic bag and you throw it out there with the kids. And you hope it's no. If they're being bad, well.
Hours of fun. Okay, so technically it's pretty impressive, but what about quiet? What about being alone with our thoughts or not disturbing the neighbors?
Quiet, Schmeier. Well, no, in all seriousness, I think it's kind of interesting that we are dragging our electronics, which is just one example of all the different technological applications that we're starting to take with us everywhere, but now we're taking our televisions and we're putting them outside, which is kind of freaky when you think about the fact that we can no longer be alone and be quiet, and also when you think about notions of privacy from your next door neighbors. Mm-hmm. And they're having, Steve was also telling me, these things are huge in cottage country. Can you imagine, you go up to your cottage to hear the crickets, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, Apocalypse Now.
But yeah, I think that's interesting that we obviously have this urge to be outdoors, but at the same time it's almost like we can't quite bear to really just be, you know, in nature. I guess you could watch nature programs on the TV when you're in nature.
Thanks, Kath.
Thanks, Nora. Bye-bye. Okay, I'm going to get back in because I'm freezing.
So am I.
This is
efficient.
This is
computerized.
This is
a reflection of our times.
This is Spark.
With a sleek beauty all its own.
Hey, Spark, you're looking for oopsie emails? Here's one for you. Many moons ago, I worked for a West Coast book publisher, and the warehouse staff had just helped me with a major project. I wanted the rest of the office to know how great they had been to work with, because it had been a bit of friction between front office and back office, and as a new manager, I thought I'd help build the trust. So I emailed everyone in the office, president everyone down, thanking the warehouse staff and the manager for their awesome work. It was a good email. I thought I'd done a great job. 2 minutes later, the warehouse manager, an ex-Marine, is in my office shaking a piece of paper at me. Spellcheck is a blessing. Spellcheck is a curse, especially when it changes your misspelt warehouse into whorehouse. I had to buy donuts for a week and very rarely check my spelling anymore.
We got that comment in response to last week's show on the cringe-inducing times that you should not have hit send on that email. Oh, speaking of email... Hey, Nora, remember to promo Future Mail on the On Demand episode. Cheers, Nora. Oh, and take the cat to the vet. Right, gotcha. Thanks, Nora. Have you ever used this kind of thing? There are these little online services that let you write a little reminder to yourself to do something or accomplish a goal by a certain date, and then it sends you a message, an email, at a particular time in the future that you specify. Pretty handy. We're going to talk about it on an upcoming episode of Spark. And here's what we'd like to know in preparation. What do you send yourself emails to remind yourself of? Like, I email my CBC account all the time with things that I have to remember to do when I get to work, so it's there when I turn on the computer in the morning. What do you send? Let us know by, well, sending an email or visiting the Spark blog.
Find Spark online. cbc.ca/spark.
Okay, so back to the whole on-demand thing. The digital world gives us on-demand access to all kinds of culture and information, right? But is that always a good thing? Like, I can find out news from any part of the world anytime I want online. I can even subscribe to a news feed so it's automatically updating all the info I'm interested in. But turning on the computer gets to be like standing under a waterfall with all this information coming at you.
My name is Peter Rukavina. I'm a web developer, hacker, writer, broadcaster.
Peter's found a way to organize all that on-demand info so it's more in the background with his Nabas tag, a wireless-enabled rabbit. So, Peter, what does your rabbit look like?
Well, like a rabbit, of course. it's sort of a simplified Art Deco rabbit, let's say, sort of smoothed off. It's not furry, but it has two movable ears at the top and a nose on its front.
Movable ears? What do you mean, movable ears?
Well, that's sort of one of its ways of communicating with we in the human world. It's when it's speaking or at various times of the day, it will sort of swing around its motorized ears.
Okay, let's back things up for a second. This rabbit is actually an ambient computer, meaning it presents you with information, but it fits covertly into your surroundings. In Peter's case, the rabbit sits in the living room, and he's named it Antigone.
At the top of every hour, it will tell us what the time is. It can actually read weblogs to you, if you like, or RSS feeds from any source, so then you know, the New York Times to the Globe and Mail.
Weather.
You can have it tell you what the weather forecast is going to be on a regular schedule. So at 5 minutes after eight every morning, just before we're about to leave the house, it tells us what the weather forecast for Charlottetown is.
Today,
Overcast. 8 degrees Celsius.
So obviously, I mean, it's not a magical rabbit. It's connected to the internet somehow.
Oh, no,
right?
It is magical, actually.
How does this actually work, though?
Well, it's a Wi-Fi enabled rabbit. I guess that's uh-huh. Where its specialness lies. And so it's actually connected to the wireless internet that's running into my house, and then it communicates with the NabazTag server. That's sort of where the brain of the rabbit lives, for all intents and purposes. So
yeah, I mean, there seems to be this whole new type of device, you know, which is not quite a personal computer, not quite a smart cell phone, but still connected to the internet. I noticed that on your blog, you call these things smart networked objects.
Well, I mean, I think that the greater thing that is appealing to me is that this thing is not, I mean, although it has a lot in common with a computer, using or interacting with the rabbit doesn't feel like what I do, you know, for 12 hours a day, sit in front of a computer and make websites. So it feels very un-computer, un-internet-like. I think the next interesting wave for me is going to be when common everyday things don't necessarily, you know, like the notion of having a computer screen and a keyboard built into my fridge is sort of absurd. I don't want to sit in front of my fridge and browse the internet.
Right.
But the notion that somehow my fridge can tell me when those leftovers are going to expire, you know, that's sort of interesting. So it's sort of, it's building the network out into something more than just, you know, what we're used to using, which is cell phones, PDAs, and computers. So
what does your family think about NabazTag?
My 7-year-old son, Oliver, I think, is still... I took Antigone to work today, and we put him in the car, and Oliver wanted to make sure that Antigone had a seatbelt so that Antigone, if, you know, we got into an accident, would be okay.
Aww.
So I think there is, you know, it's not quite an anthropomorphic object, but it has qualities with that.
Thanks a lot for telling us about it.
No trouble.
Technology.
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 Etiquette.
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 Etiquette. Wait.
Etiquette.
Is that how you say it?
Kit.
Tech-a-cat.
Touchy-cat.
Tech-a-cat.
With me, Tom Howell.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Nora. So you've been talking about on-demand stuff today,
mm-hmm.
but what if what I want isn't a TV show and it isn't the Charlottetown Weather Report as reported by a wireless rabbit? Maybe I want missions accomplished. I want duties done. I want my personal work outsourced to another country.
Okay, now companies have been outsourcing labor like to other countries for a long time.
Yeah, but more recently, individual people have started outsourcing their tasks, well, particularly to India.
Now, I know there is that website, Your Man in India.
Which has the slogan, send your chores to Bangalore.
Everyone needs a catchy slogan, Tom. Now, as I understand it, this is kind of an organization where you pay someone who's in India to do a part of your job or to do personal stuff.
All kinds of things, yeah. You can get someone to write letters to your own grandparents.
Really?
Yes, and send birthday cards to your own nephews. Or book a dinner reservation or really anything. What would you outsource if you could?
Well, what I said on the blog was I would outsource my vacuuming because I hate vacuuming.
Yawn. Denny from Winnipeg posted on the blog a much more interesting idea. Here are his thoughts.
So the frivolous answer I've decided to go with is shaving. I absolutely loathe shaving. I would pay to have someone shave my face while I slept. Anyways, that's my idea. Thanks, Spark. Bye.
Okay, but for real, Tom, it's not like Denny would be able to find someone in India to shave him or me do my, you know, vacuuming for me. It's more like having a personal assistant or a secretary, right?
Well, kind of, except you can hire people to do anything, well, except shaving, and they'll do it. And, of course, the issue is in India, the wages are a lot lower than they are here.
Yeah, now that's a techiquette question for today, because it's really this sort of moral question is it outsourcing your own personal stuff to India ethically okay?
I think it's ethical as long as you're not kind of ripping them off for what their country's standards are.
If you end up hiring people at $3 an hour online, then sooner or later there aren't going to be any jobs here, so our economy tanks and then nobody wins.
It's fine to hire if they have the skills and what it takes,
but I think it's greedy. If I'm the person doing it, it's all about me. I want the best deal. I don't care what that guy think. So, yeah, I guess that ethically it does suck.
So, if you want a clear answer, never ask a bunch of random people on the street.
So, who did you find out to talk about this?
I went to see a professor seeking moral clarity.
I'm Ritu Birla. I'm a professor in the Department of History at the University of Toronto. You can't really think about your man in Mumbai in a vacuum. You have to put him in a context. Be particularly attentive to that person not as a means, not as an instrument, but as a person with agency and choice. And if you actually engage that person as someone with agency and choice, then you are going to be stuck in an ethical dilemma, because you must ask yourself, what choice does that person have? That's where the politics and the questions of capitalism come into play. I think that if you're hiring the person throws you into existential crisis and an ethical dilemma, it may be a good thing.
Thanks, Cleetu.
Thank you.
So The answer is never go to a postmodernist and ask for moral clarity.
Good advice. So this is sticky now.
It is. So then I went to Mumbai, where they can solve anything. Well, I didn't actually go there. I phoned up Abhilash Robert, who works for a company called Tasks Every Day. And I asked him for his take on the morality of hiring him and also what his most unusual assignments have been recently.
Okay.
The strangest task, I guess a couple of months ago, you know, one of our clients wanted me to find a suitable Indian groom for her. She believes that the Indian men are pretty honest and loyal to their wives. I'm not too sure how much that's true, but that's what she believes in. Another interesting client, he wanted to search for some stones, especially that particular stone which David used to kill Goliath. It took me almost forever to find that. Last I found it was made of graphite and a bit of basalt.
Oh, well, you found it.
Yeah, I did. I read the Bible as well online.
I wonder, do you have any thoughts on the ethical, moral issues of outsourcing tasks that people don't want to do here to another country? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, to be honest, I haven't actually dwelled too deep into that. You know, this is my bread and butter, and this is what I have to do, and then this is what I enjoy doing. You know, you work on different tasks on a daily basis. You update yourself with so much of information which you actually wouldn't learn that in school or in college.
Abhilash Robert in Mumbai. So he actually used to work in a call center, but as you can tell, this new job is somewhat more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I mean, it's interesting because we pay people all the time here to do tasks that we don't want to do ourselves, and certainly Abhilash doesn't seem to be troubled by it. But the ethical question is partly an economics question, right? I mean, is it ethical for you as an individual to take advantage of the difference in the labor market and the cost of living? Like, how much are these people being paid?
Not much, as you might expect. Mm. The companies in India pay one of these assistants roughly $500 per month, and they have longish working days.
You know, it sounds like there isn't really an ethical hard line here. I would love to know what people think. Is it ethical to outsource your life? Let us know. spark@cbc.ca. Another interesting part of this story, though, is what outsourcing is doing to the economy overall.
I don't know about that.
Well, you know, if you walk down the street in Bangalore, which is one of the real industrial and tech sector hotspots in India, you'll see these big buildings with American names on them, like Coca-Cola, Airbus,
Oracle and IBM and Accenture and Microsoft.
Who's that, Nora?
That's Anand Giridharadas. He's a journalist for the New York Times who's based in Mumbai, and he's covering these huge changes in the Indian economy and culture because of outsourcing. So listen to what he says about outsourcing to India.
Because outsourcing has worked so well, everyone wants to get in on it. Mexico wants America's business. China wants Japan's business. And so India, which for a time had something of a monopoly on being able to say, hey, we are the people who do other people's work, is now facing all these rivals. Now, the upshot of all of that, the Indians have a choice. Either they let the Chinese and the Moroccans and the Mexicans cut into their game, or they say, we're going to keep that work by actually employing Chinese and Moroccans and Mexicans and getting the work done in those countries, but having it done under our company. It's a shift from being a doer of work to a broker of work. And I'll give you just one example that was quite striking to me. There was an American bank that wanted to create loan products for Hispanics. Now, this required a website that was in Spanish. Now, Indians would not be the ideal people to do this, presumably.
Right.
So you'd think they'd go to an American company with a Mexican operation or a Mexican company or something like that. What instead happened is quite revolutionary. They hired an Indian company in Bangalore, which in turn had an office in Monterrey, Mexico. Think about this. This means an American bank sends work to India, effectively. The Indians send the work to Mexico.
Right.
The work is returned to the Indians and returned to the Americans. And Americans are hiring a company 7,000 miles away to basically hire people 150 miles south of the Texas border.
You know, I have to say, Tom, we were going to put this interview on the show, but honestly, it was too interesting to cut down and fit on the end of this show. So we're going to save it for next week. You know, Anand described to me basically outsourcing 2.0, the huge changes that are happening in the Indian economy, but that are going to affect the global economy as well. So I hope that people will check it out online. We've posted the whole thing there, and we're going to run it on the show next week.
I'll look forward to it. Can I go?
I kept you rather past your time. See you, Tom.
Bye.
Turn on the box.
That's it for our look at on-demand culture. And it seems to me that the tension is between the pleasure and convenience of having all that information or services on demand and the risk of being overwhelmed by it. Like, if you're so busy that you don't have time to find someone to love, maybe the answer isn't to outsource it, but to dial back the constant demands on your own life. But a Wi-Fi rabbit, that's an on-demand tool I can get behind. That's it for Spark this time. The show is made by Elizabeth Bowie, Dan Meisner, Tom Howell, and me, Nora Young. And by
Matthew Cashmore,
Kathy Bond,
Peter Rukavina,
Ritu Birla,
Anand Girdardas,
and the Spark community.
John Hansen, calling from Montreal, Quebec.
My name is Gary Kelly.
I'm Cliff Tour from Edmonton, Alberta.
This is Denis calling from Winnipeg.
Oh, and by the way, my name is Jason.
Please do drop by the Spark blog. I'm there. You can listen to the whole show again, hear full unedited interviews, and help us make upcoming shows like the people you just heard. Right now, we're working on shows about geek stereotypes. We're investigating what the heck your kids are up to for a kids' trends show. And we're calling out to all the two-finger typists out there. Do you use the old hunt and peck method? We've got a question for you at the Spark blog, cbc.ca/spark. Spark is made with Creative Commons music. You can find the list of artists at the blog too. I'm Nora Young. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.
We're shaking her.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.